Welcome to the Education Gadfly Show. Hello, this is your host, Mike Petrilli of the Thomas B. Fordham Foundation, here with my co-host, the man they call El Burrito Grande, Rick Hess.
Whoa, hola, amigo.
All right.
Man, we're not offending any of our listenership with our delving beneath the border here, are we?
We are inclusive here.
I like that.
We are inclusive. And I believe that somewhere you can get the Education Gadfly Show in Spanish.
That's a beautiful thing.
Yes, good. We just haven't found where that place is yet. So, Rick, this week we heard from our good friend Michael Goldstein, who is the principal of one of the best charter schools in the country, the Match Charter School in Boston. And tell our listeners what he figured out.
Well, I think our listeners will be, you know, pleased to know that Mike figured out, if you take the phrase, subscribe Gadfly, and mix it up, you can get scabby drug files. Mike's what they call a regular Dave Barry, you know?
Yeah.
He's got that kind of funny.
That's very nice. But you know, Rick, there is nothing scabby about the Education Gadfly Show. Still, Mike, we appreciate the effort, and we'd like to hear from you, too, what you think about the Gadfly Show, for scabby or not.
So, we got a Chartered Movement t-shirt for the men.
Very nice. Sure. I think we can send them that once we figure out what that is. What does that Chartered Movement t-shirt look like?
It's got a smiling kid.
Ah,
holding the school, hugging it.
I like that. Good. Good, good, good. Do you wear that t-shirt, Rick?
Frequently.
Good.
Never got to wear a suit, baby.
All right. Well, let's get going, Rick. Let's get going. No more chit-chat. We're going to start today, of course, with a game of Pardon the Gadfly. Then we have an interview with Jeff Hennig, who's a Columbia University professor, who is on the Charter School Research Consensus Panel. We'll hear all about that. And finally, our weird correspondent, Liam, will serve up a dose of education news of the weird. Sound good?
I'm up for it.
All right. So let's play Pardon the Gadfly. Three topics, 2 minutes each. Ready?
Let's go.
Okay, here's our first topic. Colleges across the land are reporting that SAT scores are down big time. Some blame the test, others blame the kids. There's an editorial in the Wall Street Journal by David Kahn, who is a tutor of SAT students, and he blames the schools. So what do you think?
I gotta say, I think Kahn contributed probably one of the least helpful pieces that I've read on the op-ed page of the Wall Street Journal in a while. This genius has some anecdotal evidence that some colleges are seeing scores going down. He does a little bit of hippy-dippy stuff with problematic stats and shows that SAT scores might be trending down a bit. And then he marries this to some kind of ad hoc but overarching analysis proving the decline of American education in the last 35 years. I got to ask what this guy's thinking that he would want to put his name on this and put it in public. And I got to wonder why the Wall Street Journal thought it was worth running.
Rick, did the Wall Street Journal turn down an editorial by you recently?
Frequently.
Let's just put that on the record. Okay, good. Look, I actually thought it was a great piece, and he made a very good argument. The SAT was changed recently. They made a conscious effort so that it was harder to just cram for the SAT and do well. But by decreasing some of the focus on, you know, on some of the analogies, what they were trying to do is say, look, you have to really be well-read in order to do well on the SAT, okay? And that makes a lot of sense. And his argument was that students aren't doing well on the SAT because they're not very well-read.
That's fine, but by what metric can you make any comparisons going back 35, 40 years? We got a fundamentally different testing pool. We got fundamentally different questions on the SAT. And the guy kind of poo-poos this away, saying, these aren't excuses.
All right.
Well, what the heck kind of piece is this?
Fine, fine, fine. But I think it's a reasonable hypothesis, right? I mean, I think this is the result of content-free education, right? I mean, look, we've got an education system that no longer values learning about anything. You're just supposed to learn how to learn and learn to love learning. We don't actually study history or science or literature or have kids read something of value. Well, this is the result. At the end of the day, they sit down and take an SAT test, and they don't know anything, so they're not able to answer the questions.
Well, this is my grandpa, you know, used to argue for years that, you know, world's going to hell in a handbasket. But he was never on the op-ed page of the Wall Street Journal either.
Well, maybe he should have been. What's our second topic, Rick?
A powerful piece. All right. Topic 2. New York Times article pointed out this week that many colleges and universities are admitting students who have not yet graduated from high school. Not only have not yet graduated, but are high school dropouts. Another race to the bottom, Mike?
Oh, my goodness. This is another sign of the apocalypse. You know, the article points out that there were a couple of schools, including, let's see, the Interborough Institute in New York City, where virtually all of the students were high school dropouts. Okay. You have to wonder if this is just a student aid scandal going on here. But the bigger issue is that there are some more mainstream colleges that are accepting kids who did not get a high school diploma. Now, I can understand some exceptions. I mean, the genius of our education system is that it does allow for second chances and third chances and fourth chances. And we don't want to clamp down on that too much. But shouldn't there be standards between high school and college? I mean, that's the whole point, is to move towards some seamless.
I think you're leaving too much room here, Mike. Either a high school diploma means something or it doesn't.
Right.
If we think high school diplomas are meaningful and the kids need to get them, then they should be treated as such. And colleges should not be simply backing up the truck and saying any warm body is qualified to come into our institution. And we certainly shouldn't be financing these educations with any kind of collegiate aid. If we don't think high school diplomas are necessary or useful, then we ought to scale back our expectations, and we shouldn't be forcing 17-year-olds to hang around the hallways of a school doing things that we don't value.
All right, well, let's say we get to the point where we have some very good exit exams that say, here's what you're expected to know by the end of your high school career. And we allow students to test out of sitting through class. I mean, we like that idea, right?
We do.
So let's say you're 25, you know, you've missed this chance.
And props to Ted Sizer for suggesting this 30 years ago.
Right, exactly. You know, let's say that, you know, you did drop out of high school, you've done some other things, but now you want to go back and get higher education. We believe that they should have a chance.
GED, baby.
GED. All right. So you're saying, you know, so as long as you go back and take some form of test to show you know the stuff, you're okay with
it. I mean, it strikes me that if colleges are saying, look, high school diploma doesn't matter in terms of our admission process, it's sending a seriously mixed message.
Okay. Very good. Well, our final topic for Part in the Gadfly. No Child Left Behind and Science. Now, this past Sunday, the Washington Post in an editorial argued that No Child Left Behind's focus on boosting reading skills is paying off with higher science scores in the fourth grade. Their argument is that rather than narrowing out subjects like science and history, the law's focus on reading is lifting all boats. After all, now students can read the science textbooks. Maybe they couldn't before. Do you buy this argument?
You know, my Uncle Clay lit up a cigar in 1974, and we've since that time see global temperatures rise. I would be careful about building strong causal arguments about the cigar my Uncle Clay smoked in 74 and changes. You know,
it depends on how big the cigar was.
It certainly does. You know, and you know, there's evidence today that kids are playing more violent video games in the last 2 years, and we could trace bump up in AP science scores to the changes in the degree of violent video games kids are playing because they're learning more about human anatomy when they slice up the bad guys and, you know, decapitate them. You got to be careful about these kinds of causal claims. I mean, my goodness, if there's ever a case to be cautious and sensible, it's when you're dealing with crude aggregate national data. And I can't imagine why our friends at EdTrust want to go out on the limb making these kinds of over-the-top claims. I don't know anybody else who makes these kinds of claims. Except maybe, it strikes me that Fordham occasionally has delved into such claims.
Oh, Rick, I can't believe that you would say that. I mean, we did claim last week on the show and in the Education Gadfly that, you know, when you look at these science score results and you break them out by state, you do see some patterns. I mean, some of the states that do best are states that hold their schools accountable for science. I think that's reasonable hypothesis that there's a correlation there, right? You know, Education Trust, look, every time any study comes out, they find a way to claim that their beloved No Child Left Behind Act is working. You know, I think we need to be more skeptical. There's a new study out by NCES, in fact, that shows that schools, at least at grades 1 through 4, are spending less time teaching math and history and science and more time teaching reading. Now, again, maybe you could claim that this is a good thing, that, you know, in first grade or second grade, it makes sense to focus on reading, and maybe that's going to lift all boats. But at the same time, you could also argue that this is going to be a real problem if students, again, aren't, you know, learning real content, aren't studying history, aren't studying science. Not only will they not know anything, they're also not going to be able to read anything because they won't have the vocabulary and the content.
So it comes back to content and the need for national standards that are broad and embracing, doesn't it?
That's right.
This sounds a little familiar.
To counteract the race to the bottom. Very good.
Fordham, just as consistent and on message as he had trust.
Ooh, ouch. Appreciate it. Ouch, ouch, ouch. All right, well, that is it for Pardon the Gadfly. Now we turn to our interview this week with Jeff Hennig. Let's take a listen. We're here today with Jeff Hennig from Columbia University's Teacher College. Jeff, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
Good. Well, Jeff is a member of the Charter School Achievement Consensus Panel. And this panel came out with a report today, a white paper, about charter school research. Basically, as far as I can tell, what the white paper says is that most charter school research is not very good. I think that's a fair characterization, Jeff. And why is it? Why don't we have better research in this field?
Well, I think it says most of it's not very good, but I think it also says that it's been getting better. And I think the reason, the main reason why it's not better than it is that there really has been, until recently, limited data of the kinds we'd need to answer the kinds of questions that policymakers and funders and citizens seem to want answered.
Okay. Now, the best example probably of charter school research that's not very good, but that's gotten a lot of attention, was the big AFT study last year, working with the NAEP results, and then a similar NCES study that, you know, for the most part, backed up what the AFT found. What was the problem with that study?
Well, I mean, first of all, I think the study was useful, unlike some folks who are very critical of it. I think it helped to highlight an issue, which is that charter schools, like regular public schools, have to deal with the students they're dealing with, and that it's very hard to raise test scores if you're dealing with a population that comes from high-need families and communities. That said, the study was very limited in terms of its ability to tease out how much of that was going on. It basically said charter schools had lower test scores, but wasn't able with any precision to say how much of that was because the students were different rather than the schools were not performing.
Right. Okay. So going forward, what does the panel basically say are the key questions we should be asking? What are some of the topics for research that would be most helpful to policymakers?
Well, I should say that one thing the panel's doing is asking. It's not just telling. I mean, it's trying to get a discussion going as to how do we move best. Do we need more national studies or more local studies, for example? Sometimes local studies can be done with more precision and detail that's helpful to people in communities. That's what they want. They want to know about their group of charter schools versus their public schools, whereas national studies tend to be grosser. They answer big questions, but fuzzy questions, and often with less precision.
Right, right. And how much does it matter whether or not charter schools on average are doing better than traditional public schools? I mean, that's been the question the media is most concerned about, but does that, at the end of the day, get us anywhere?
Well, I think it's something. I mean, I think that is a relevant question, but it's certainly not the only question. For example, it matters a great deal if charter schools on average, say, are the same but have greater range. It would be possible that charter schools would have some excellent schools, better than the best public schools, and some worse schools, worse than the worst public schools. The average would be the same. We'd, from a policy standpoint or from a citizen standpoint, want to know that difference.
All right. Well, very good. Well, again, this is the consensus panel. I do want to know, Jeff, I mean, what was there a lot of camaraderie on the panel, or were people really throwing punches at one another behind the scenes?
People, researchers and charter school researchers in particular, disagree about a lot of things, and there's a lot of tension early on. But over time, folks learn to talk to one another, especially if the conversation is greased by a glass of beer.
Good. Well, I thought I did see a black eye on you, and I'm glad that that's healing just fine, and we've got some consensus going forward. Jeff, thanks for coming on the show.
Glad to have been here.
So, Rick, what do you think? Is research ever going to be able to answer the important questions about charter schools and help policymakers make good decisions?
No, I mean, no more than good research is ever going to answer the questions about what level we ought to set welfare payments at, or, you know, what the tax code should look like. Research can help us make judgments when we've got mixed feelings. But at the end of the day, whether you or I or anybody else thinks charter schools are a good thing is going to be a product as much of how we understand the world and how we think these things work as any couple of pencil-necked economists sitting around trying to crunch a couple of fourth-grade achievement numbers.
All right, that's fair. But, you know, I do have some optimism that if we can at least agree that some states are doing better than others and getting high-quality charter schools based on good research, we can start to tease out the policy lessons. Is it because they're funding their charter schools at a higher level or because of good authorizing or something else? And that can inform policy.
That's true. And, in fact, we can just agree on what good research looks like. at least we can start to create incentives so we stop getting all these horrible studies kind of thrown out and confusing the heck out of everybody.
Very good. Okay, well, it is time for everyone's favorite. It's not talking about education research. It is Education News of the Weird with our special correspondent, Mr. Liam Julian. Liam, you've been missing from the show lately. Where have you been? You been on assignment?
No, I've been in my office, Mike.
Ooh. Ouch, ouch. Well, that's right. I forgot. We did lock him in there for a couple weeks, didn't we?
Well deserved.
Yeah, well deserved. Well deserved. Okay. Well, Liam, tell us, what is weird this week?
Well, this week, Mike, the weird news is coming to us from New Zealand, where a report just came out that links healthy food with improved behavior in the classroom and with improved classroom test scores. The executive director of the Obesity Action Coalition, Celia Murphy, said, quote, "When schools take out bad food and put good food in, all the teachers say the kids are easier to teach, concentrate better, attendance improves, and behavior improves." Now, the New Zealand Ministry of Education has said that each school is autonomous, so they're not going to, you know, make any sort of mandate. But some schools have banned their students from bringing all sorts of stuff to lunch. Fruit roll-ups, out. So my question is, Rick, what do you eat for lunch?
Me? I like to go heavy on the fruit roll-ups. When I eat with Petrilli, I like to get that Indian stuff. What do we call that?
Chicken biryani.
Chicken biryani. Strongly endorse it. There's a joint here in D.C. But, you know, I mean, I'm not even as sure. I think we locked Liam up too long. I'm not sure what's weird about
it. I was going to say.
You know, if kids do better when they're eating right, and they're healthier when they're eating right,
right,
and their parents keep stuffing Yo-Hos in them because they're being irresponsible, thank God somebody's encouraging kids to eat decent food once in a while.
I know. There's nothing weird about this. And in fact, I think EdTrust has recently had a report that shows that the rising NAEP scores are related to No Child Left Behind's new requirement that children eat chicken biryani for lunch.
And in fact, NCLB, making kids healthy.
That's right. That's right. All right, Liam. Well, you know, we would like to have you back on the show, but next time, come up with something really weird, okay?
Vanilla week.
Vanilla week.
Vanilla week. All right. I mean, all the way to New Zealand, and that's the best he got. Whew, that is tough. Well, that is
good
all
for
the
Kiwis, though, huh?
Well, good for the Kiwis. He go. Oh. Ouch. He could have mentioned Kiwis, and he didn't.
Ooh.
All right. Well, that is all the time we have for this week. Thank you for joining us, and don't forget to read the original Education Gadfly at www.edexcellence.net. Till next week,
I'm Rick Hess.
And I'm Mike Petrilli of the Thomas B. Fordham Foundation, signing off.